Hey.
Hey. Remember us?
From the people who brought you the reissue roundup.
We got a new show now. It's called Records.
Yeah.
We were just listening to one. It's the first self-titled Aerosmith record. We should introduce ourselves.
I'm John.
I'm Mac.
And we are Records.
Yes.
Yeah, so we got, basically what we're going to do is we're going to sit here and we're going to talk about Records.
I think that's a great idea, John.
Is there anything else to this other than...
Not really. We're just going to maybe a little psychoanalyzing, musicology, appreciation, helpful tips, you know, whatever comes up in the stew.
If we're lucky.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk. We're talking about this record from 1973.
It's the year I was born.
Of course, the hit on this record being Dream On, which I was just reading, apparently wasn't released as a single till 1976.
This is true. I read that, too.
Now, why was that?
I have no idea. I think it's because this first album didn't get, you know, they were still figuring out how to push this band. And I think they just went later and said, you know what, this was a great song, let's push this, after they had established themselves with a few more records. That could be completely false. I don't know, but I'm sticking with it.
It sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this album?
You know, I love it. Another guy, Rhino here, Brian Thomas, laid this on me. And I was a fan of Toys in the Attic. And when I was a little kid, growing up like that, I kind of caught them when I was young for their 80s comeback with Permanent Vacation and Pump. And, you know, I liked those records when I was a kid, and I still kind of, I think Dude Looks Like a Lady's pretty awesome song still. Then I just, you know, like then grunge came around and pretty much just forgot about metal for like 10 years. And bands like Aerosmith or hard rock, you know. And I've been recently getting back into it. I actually have a signed copy of Toys in the Attic from Steven Tyler. And this one's cool because it sounds a little more, it's not as polished Aerosmith. They sound like a young band. His voice and persona isn't quite, you know, put together as much as it would be, you know, like he really found his stride. And so it's good. That's why I like it. It's just a little more raw and innocent and as far as Aerosmith records go.
Yeah, his voice is different on this one. Yeah. At times he sounds like Tim Buckley, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely does. That's an interesting comparison. You know who else sounds like Tim Buckley? Mickey Dolenz.
Well, they hung out.
I know. I think that's why he liked him.
Right. Mm. Well, yeah, I think it sounds like he hadn't sort of found his shtick yet.
Exactly. Yep. And they do a Rufus Thomas cover, Walking the Dog, which
they do.
I do love. I love Rufus Thomas. And this is just a fun, you know, it's kind of like we were talking about earlier. This is where my head's at right now. Just... I won't go as far to say full-blown boogie rock, but definitely 70s rock,
yeah,
with R&B overtones from that time, you know, blues-based, which I used to hate for a while. Like, I just didn't care, but now I've decided I don't like all the stuff I used to like when I didn't like this. So I flip-flopped.
Gotcha. Hmm. Yeah, I don't even know that I should be talking about an Aerosmith record. I have such a tumultuous... history with this band, you know, owned Toys in the Attic back in the day, sort of when I'm, you know, when you first discover classic rock and you're like, oh, Jesus, there's more to life than punk rock or, you know, synth bands or whatever you're into.
Yep.
And, you know, once the floodgates open, it's just like anything from the 70s, yeah, bring it on.
Yep.
You know, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, The Who, Rush.
I never got into Rush, but we've talked about that.
I got into Rush a good bit, but I remember, yeah, I wound up with a copy of Toys in the Attic, and I really dug it at the time. But I find that, it didn't age particularly well for whatever reason. And then as it was sort of on the wane as far as my taste for it,
yeah.
Then they do the Dude Looks Like a Lady stuff in the late 80s.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't stomach that. And the ballads, you know, the Armageddon tunes and...
Oh, God, yeah, no, that stuff's execrable.
Yeah, you know, and then Steven Tyler's just ubiquitous. He's at the Super Bowl. He's playing with what's his face?
Who was he playing with recently?
Well, it was, and this was like a couple years ago. He did the Super Bowl and Justin Timberlake
Britney Spears.
And just this, it's like no boundaries, you know, as far as like what you will and won't do to keep yourself in the limelight.
Well, it's weird. I can't say that I disagree with you, but for me, that guy is like Teflon. He can do whatever he wants, and I'm still going to think he's badass. It's just something about him. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I'm from Boston, and you know, that's that, you know, Boston band, and I feel like, oh, you know, even if it gets like that, it's like those are still the same sort of, you know, funny.
I think he's banking on that.
Yeah,
that very phenomenon there,
and it seems to work more for, in my mind, for him than it does for a lot of other people. Because I think he has a sense of humor about what he's doing as well. That's one of the things I like about him.
He does seem like a cool guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who said, corporate? Fuck corporate!
But that's another podcast.
Yep.
Or maybe not.
I don't know. Let's play another tune, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's play the biggie off of here. Let's play Dream On.
All right, here we go.
Fade out.
Thank you.
That song rules.
Yeah, it's a pretty well written track.
I mean, just, and it's funny, I was listening to it the other night at home with my relaxant of choice, and just, you know, on the big speakers on the stereo, and you know, I mean, God, you've heard this song a million times. Everyone has, you know, but it's, to me, it's just still, it's well put together. Not, you know, it's well written, but it's also the guitar. A lot of thought went into that. You know, it's cool. It's got the dynamics, and it's pretty epic.
Yeah, it's kind of its own thing, it strikes me. Whereas some of the other tracks on this record, you know, kind of the standard blues, you know, sort of amped up blues style, you know, the whole swagger and, you know, kind of sing about high school shit and
pussy
chicks. Yeah, you know, and like the rock and roll life and... you know, sort of make, well, how's the first song go? Make It, Don't Break It, I think. I
yeah,
wanna
yeah,
say.
Make It.
Shit like that,
it.
You know?
I don't even know what that means. What's that mean? I never listened to the words. I don't get words till later. Like, I could probably sing the thing to myself and have no idea what I was saying. You know, none at all. Maybe
you're probably better off with this record.
I guess so. Yeah. But it's funny, though, Dream On really is completely different from the other songs in this album. It makes me wonder, like, was this the breakthrough? Was this, they had been putting these songs together because this was their first record, so they'd just been playing around, getting good, you know, writing these songs, apparently. And it was this the one where they went, wow, we can write a good song, too, you know, not just a blues workout or something.
Yeah, yeah, I think it stands out as sort of an original piece of music, whereas, you know, the others can certainly get lost in the shuffle of sort of a... any, all manner of generic, although, you know, they seem to be effective in what they're trying to do. But, you know, the thing that really, I was thinking about this earlier as, you know, I was listening to this and trying to think of what I was going to say about it.
Right.
Being in, living in L.A. and especially having been in a couple of bands, and you're in a band currently, Mac.
Yeah.
Letter Openers.
Forever.
In L.A., you see so many guys
right.
who want to be in a band because they want to be in a band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like there are two kinds of musicians. There are those guys, and then there are the people who have something to say.
Yep, oh, that's
you know,
true.
Whether it be through their instrument or through their words. And I tend to put Aerosmith in the former. It's like, I was reading the liner notes. These are like juvenile delinquents. You know, they got in trouble at school. And it's like, how can we make our predicament into something cool? Well, rock and roll is a place for us.
Yeah.
You know? So that's kind of where I put these guys, in that it's rock for its own sake, you know?
I dig that, though. I mean, I agree with you. It's funny. It's like I don't really disagree with anything you're saying. I in turn like that. I just go thumbs up. I think some of the what they have in the liner notes here is the original copy from the album. It looks like.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it's tough to say, like, because I wasn't around and at the time, you know, or cognizant of what was going on. How much of this was being read by your average teenager as tongue-in-cheek, or was it being read as real? Like, you know, because to me it seems kind of funny. It's like so over the top, you know, like these guys basically picked up out of the gutter to, you know, and made a record, you know, got kicked out of school. It's like the whole Sweat Hogs thing, you know, like how much of that was shtick and how much of it was, or knowing shtick, should I say. And how much of it was like, wow, these guys really are like dangerous, you know, they could have killed us with a knife, but instead they're going to play this guitar.
Right. I didn't get that they were supposed to be dangerous, but just that they were kind of malcontents.
Yeah, ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah, ne'er-do-wells. And, you know, of course, as many have throughout the ages, turned to rock and roll.
And I think at that time, you know, that was very much still a badge of honor. It kind of is today, but things are just so cynical today and everything's so postmodern, it's ridiculous. But I think at that time, people still held on to that romantic notion. A lot of like sort of blue-collar rock, which this definitely is, that you have your choice. You can go work at the auto plant, or I can go and join a rock and roll band, you know, because I'm not good enough to, you know, keep playing baseball or football. You know, I'm going to be all done after high school. And this is a way to prolong your adolescence. And that in and of itself was pretty much, I think, enough for a lot of guys. And I think what sells these guys even more and in just lifting them above the morass of boogie rock and blues rock and, you know, hard rock are a couple things. One, big Beatle fans. And that's where you can hear that in Dream On and in their later, some of their later stuff where it's like, oh, you guys were definitely fans of the White Album and Abbey Road and whatnot. And I can certainly hear that. And the other thing is, again, and this for me is like it's Steven Tyler's, you know, personality. Like he was just the biggest mouth in the room, you know, and he could, and he was very happy to let you know about it.
As an orifice alone.
Zing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you were talking about that whole thing about, you know, blue collar, you turn to rock and roll. And, you know, I think at this time, you got to remember in 73, you know, a lot of that stuff wasn't so played out as it is now.
Right.
You know, I mean, if I hear another song about life on the road, you know, and most of the songs about life on the road seem to be written by the people who are riding in buses.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And how awful it is. And it's like, I don't really want to hear that anymore.
Well, you can't identify with it. That's the problem. This is where I think a lot of bands lose the plot. Is they're, you know, well, they don't really lose the plot because they don't change. People, good writers, good bands, they write what they know. And so a band that nobody knows and they're starting out poor, they're going to write about their experiences. And if they have talent, then those will be compelling. But I think there are experiences that a lot more people can relate to because you're you start out one of us, and then if you get successful, next thing you know, you're in a bus all day or you're in the hotels, and guess what?
You got to find something to gripe about, though. You know,
well, you got to, and that's the thing. It's a catch-22 because you want to write about what you know and what you're experiencing, but that thing that you are now experiencing, it's like writing a song how what a bummer it is to be so rich and famous. You know, it's like who's going to identify with that? No one.
The yacht blues.
I mean, yeah, seriously. I mean, you really cut down your audience to rich and famous people, which I think a lot of some of these artists. You know, I don't really know whether I think Aerosmith is that way or not. I don't think so. But I think that's half their goal. You know, I think a lot of bands coming up now, they want, you know, like, oh, I can't wait. And you see this a lot in Los Angeles, too. Like, you know, anybody gets a little bit of notoriety, next thing you know, an actor shows up at your show, and then it's going to be, oh, that's the band that so-and-so was at, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow or somebody. And it's like, you know, you're just trying to get your way into Hollywood's pants, you know, via rock and roll. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do.
And succeeding.
I totally am. Call me.
All right. Now, what else? What else about Aerosmith self-titled? The artwork is terrible.
It is really awful.
It's really bad.
It's about the worst album cover I've ever seen. I think Toys in the Attic is a shitty album cover. The only good album cover of theirs, in my mind, was Rocks.
Yeah, Rocks is okay.
It looks sort of awesome. But this is horrible. Yeah, who designed it? It's a picture. I don't know if it, since we're in the power of podcasts here, I'll describe it to you in case you can't conjure it at the moment. It's a blue sky with clouds with, you know, like an orange thing up top with Aerosmith's name, and then a picture of them in the center of the clouds. And it's, I guess it's okay, but I don't know what they were thinking. It's really pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess a lot of them were pretty bad. I mean, you know, you tend to think of the you know, the Led Zeppelin covers and
yeah,
things, but you know, that was I guess the cream of the crop. Most of what was going on.
And this is a band that, you know, as time moved on and we sort of lived through the 80s and the 90s where people stopped being on their records. You know, you didn't put a picture of yourself on the front,
right,
of your record. And, you know, for a lot of people, it's for good reason. I think this is a case in point. This is not what you'd call a band of lookers.
Not really. Although know? They seem to think that they are.
They're, and that's kind of charming.
They're kind of pouty and, you know, I think they like their hair a good bit.
And see, this is an interesting thing about rock and roll is that they're, you know, rock and roll for a time, it was the ugly guy's refuge. Like, that's how ugly guys got chicks. If you couldn't get rich, you joined a band. It didn't matter what you look like. You were cool. And I think these guys are definitely living that out a little bit. Same with, like, the Rolling Stones, you know. Look at the Rolling Stones. Those are not good-looking guys. Mick Jagger's good-looking because he's Mick Jagger, not because he's good-looking.
He used to be a lot better looking.
Oh, yeah. No, we all have our day in the sun. But
yeah. Well, he's pretty well carved up by now. But what do you want from a 65?
You know what I want? I want him to fucking stop.
Yes.
Just stop.
Yes.
Just stop. You hear me?
I'll get behind that. Or
it's
just
cool.
Or take some huge chances and just make some ridiculous music that, you know, you've always wanted to indulge, maybe, but
you
never
don't
thought the time was right. Well, the time is right.
Don't release it either. Like, just make it and let us discover it after you die.
There you go.
You're too, I mean, newsflash, you're old. I'm sorry. Old people don't do great stuff except write books, you know. Write a book.
Well, should we play another song?
Yeah! Let's play one. What do you want to hear?
I think the one that I liked, actually, the best on this record is One Way Street. Maybe we'll do that one.
Yeah, let's listen to that.
Following up Dream On, which is number 3. One Way Street, then. Here it is.
All right. Kick it. Kick it. Oh, I like this too.
That tune's got a groove.
That song's super, and I like the descending.
Super?
It's super. I like the descending chords. And this is another thing I was just thinking about, just listening the way he was singing. And, you know, we had commented earlier that, you know, on this album, his voice, he hadn't really nailed his voice, persona, delivery, everything in stone like it was in the albums that followed it. It's a little more raw.
A little Muppet quality to him.
It does. It's weird. It's that going for the blues, though, sort of thing. And it just made me think about the difference, you know, maybe today between singers. Nobody sings like this anymore. No, nobody does. I mean, for a long time, everybody sang this way. So I can dig how everyone got burned out on it. But even people who are soul-based, R&B-based, R&B singers, there's no vocal gymnastics on this. But he's singing his ass off. You know what I mean? Like, he's singing with personality. And I think now formula has really taken the place of personality in a lot of records that you hear. You have to be able to do your runs and your jumps and you sound like Mariah Carey and yada, yada, yada. Or you go the complete other way. If you're like a white rocker, you're going to totally, you can't, there can be no hint of like melody or churlishness or just any sort of personality. It's all just,
yeah,
woe
gotta,
is
you
me.
You got to downplay it, yeah, almost.
Yeah. Or sing off, you know, singing off key. I mean, I dig all those bands, you know, for years who were, had fronted by people who could sort of carry a tune, you know, it didn't matter because the music was cool. But, you know, sometimes you forget, you know, I listen to something like this or, you know, there are plenty of other good or better examples of somebody who's really singing like they mean it and putting on a little bit of a show, like through the record. Like I can see him singing that in my mind, not just, you know, hear it.
Yeah, he's a performer.
Yeah.
I just always, I can't help but think because, you know, a lot of this goes back to being in a particular band. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
No names mentioned, but...
I wasn't in that band.
You know, I was in this band really against my own wishes.
You were a hostage.
I was hostage.
You were bass playing hostage.
Yeah. But I was learning to play, so I was, and it was fun to do, but I really didn't like the music.
Right.
And I just remember, you know, being a band member who doesn't, you know, you don't like your band's own music. You can sort of step outside it for a minute.
Yeah.
And the front guy, you know, he just thought it was the greatest thing ever. And
right.
And people, I guess he had an inflated sense of his own place in life and the pantheon of rock and roll.
Yeah.
But he always had fun up there.
Right.
You know, I mean, he'd shake it and, you know, go crazy and all of right. that shit and do like a, you know, a 3-minute extended vamp out ending, which I couldn't stand. But it just got me thinking, like, you know what? Just because you're having fun up there doesn't necessarily mean that your audience is having fun. You know, I mean, how many shows have we been to? Because, you know, you right. know people in L.A. our sure. age and who are into music. You right. tend to see a lot of friends' bands.
Yeah.
You know, and more often than not, it's just you're there to support.
Right.
You know, and you see a lot of stuff. It's like, well, I see that you're into it. You know,
right.
you're really into it, and that's great. But there are two sides of that fence. You know, there's like, behind the stage and in front of the stage, oftentimes. Where was I going with this?
I don't know. I got lost behind the stage. I think that being into it is, you know, it's almost a crucial component. If you're not into it, either you don't have a prayer of connecting with an audience or I think putting yourself across in any reputable sort of way. But just because you are into it, you know, it's not going to change the fact if you suck, you suck. You know?
Right,
I
right.
mean, if you suck, you suck. And God bless you, you know. Play to your heart's content, but people aren't just going to come and no one's going to care and eventually you're going to stop.
It's a real testament, too, to how tough it is to be a good band.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, you got to feel it yourself.
Right.
You know, and then you got to go one further and get other people to feel it.
You got to be your own biggest fan. And I can, that's something I see in Steven Tyler. This guy, before anyone even knew who Aerosmith was probably the biggest Aerosmith fan who ever walked the face of the earth. He probably still is. You almost have to be to do that because it's not easy to get up there and sing stuff that you made up to people.
Exactly. But I think that's where sort of the next step beyond believing in yourself and being able to play is having something to say.
Right.
You know, I think it seems to me at times, you know, here and there, they might have had a little something to say musically. It seems to me like the lyrics were mostly an afterthought.
I think it's tough to say, really. I mean, I don't know that they were. I think in some cases they probably were, absolutely. But I think in other cases, I think they wanted to write about very specific things. You know, girls, drugs, you know, things that they were into and things that they felt like, you know, or maybe not even them, whoever was them or the record company or the people working with them. Just somehow this, you know, collection of heads, you know, came up with these things. And I think Steven Tyler probably writes all the lyrics, I'm assuming.
I'm assuming, too.
And I think it's his vision of this is what rock and roll is to me.
Right.
And that's where I think I diverge from you a little bit on, you know, not having anything to say. I think anything is, you know, it really depends on how you say it. You know, sometimes I feel like the medium is the message, you know, just playing a rock and roll song, singing about cars and girls. Anyone can do that. It's true. You know, it's been done. But you can, it still, I think, is possible to be done in a way that is compelling for some people, you know. Just, you know, you don't have to sing about rainforests every
right,
time.
Right. Well, obviously they've reached a lot of people. And, you know, I think there's a certain, they seem to be one of the bands who really sort of gets into the physicality of playing.
Yeah.
You know,
he does backflips,
but just, you know, in so far as, you know, hitting a groove,
right.
You know, and you're not doing anything stellar outside of a sort of, blues context, but there's that sort of, I guess, just fucking playing, you know, and if that, you know, locks in a certain way, I guess it people seem to dig it.
I think if you're going to say to yourself, what are we going to do tonight? Well, we're going to go see a rock and roll band. If that's all you're asking for, and I think a lot of people, that is all they're asking for, you know, through the years, you know, it's, I'm looking for, what are you going to do tonight? We want to go out and have fun. We're going to go see some rock and roll. And, you know, it's cool that rock and roll can be so much more than that, but I'm still kind of into the fact that it still can just be that too. You know.
Right. I get a little snobbed up now and then, I must admit. I don't know what my axe is to grind with Aerosmith. I think there's a lot of emotional baggage through you know, the Super Bowls, the dude looks like a ladies, the people I know, you know, and that's always unfair to a band.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is I've gone back and listened to some of this stuff and it's like, you know, it's all right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm probably not going to reach for it too often. You know, I'd rather go listen to a Royal Trucks record or a, you know, Drive By Truckers.
Well, those are fine records. Absolutely. Yeah.
And other truck bands.
Other truck, yeah. Hello, I'm a truck.
Derek Trucks.
Yeah. Truck Sandwich. yeah, well, I hear you. And I think, too, living through the whole alternative rock thing happening and punk, you know, kind of having its arc and, you know, growing up with, you know, this being dinosaur music, that's, you know, the word that I used to hear so much associated with it when I was in my teens. And then sort of having that bias against it, a lot of rock and roll, like this, especially 70s rock, I just wrote it all off. I wouldn't consider listening to Aerosmith. You know, our drummer's like that, John G, like he just sort of goes, you know, with some stuff like, nope, sorry, you're not going to convince me of this. And I guess I'm like that with other bands. But I almost feel like at one time I did like them, you know, like it goes back to the song in Perfect Space theory, that there's time and a place for every band, every song there is a way to like it. Almost, it seems incomprehensible sometimes, but I think it's true.
Well, I think on such a philosophical note, maybe we should end this charade.
I think it's about time.
All right. Thanks for joining us. This is Records with Mac and John and Mac.
That's us.
Here at Rhino. coming at you from Rhino, Burbank, California. Thanks for joining us.
Toodles.